I'm Tyler.
And I'm Oren.
I'm Elijah.
And welcome to the latest episode of the Horror Podcast. Those of you that are joining us for the first time today, welcome to the live screening of Puppet Master and the subsequent podcast afterwards. But tonight's episode is broken down into essentially three different chapters. The first chapter, we're going to tell you what we're excited about, kind of the things that are going on in horror and science fiction that are tripping our trigger. We're going to move on in our second act to talk about our essential question, which we will dutifully run very fast from once we introduce it. And then we're going to give you some good recommendations if you liked Puppet Master, what you might check out as a good double feature with that film. So.
Aside from the, like, other 12 Puppet Master movies. Yes.
Of which you see many of the puppets that will eventually be featured in the...
True. I think only, like, two of these are action movies. Yeah.
But they're all great, though. Man, they're so good. So, next slide. Yeah, go for it.
Oh, just tonight we're joined by a very special guest, which we don't normally have. We have Eli of Magnetic Magic Rentals and our very own Analog Sunday, which we have once a month at the Rewind Dive Bar.
Yep.
And Eli, take it away. Tell them about yourself a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, as I said, my name's Elijah, or Eli. So, as Oren said, I'm the owner of Magnetic Magic Rentals and the head of Analog Sunday, and... if you don't already know, Magnetic Magic started in about 2015 and has since grown to what I like to call like an all-encompassing analog media company, which is dedicated to the preservation, distribution, and love of everything analog media, VHS, cassettes, everything. So that includes VHS and cassette releases of indie films and their soundtracks with our partnership with directors. That includes really weird experimental zines that I've put out. And it also includes a bizarro video cassette library up on the Internet Archive where I take rips of like special interest tapes, weird stuff that you'd find in like your grandma's attic or in weird musty thrift stores. And I rip them, I put them on the Internet Archive, I use them for like mixtape fodder and things, just in the name of preservation and just a love of weird, hilarious shit. But that also has grown to include live events around Kansas City, such as Analog Sunday.
Yay!
So, as Oren said, Analog we do once a month. And it started back in like mid-2016. I started with my friend Bryce of Forever Bogus, if you're familiar, another Kansas City staple. It started up in Tapcade, like a little bit that direction, but Tapcade has since gone. And then we moved over to Screenland Armor, doing screenings up in the actual theater of Screenland Armor. And then the last couple of years, we moved down below into the basement of Armor, which is now Rewind Video Dive Bar. And yeah, it's a free monthly event where we screen bizarre but lovable movies from the original VHS tape like we did tonight. And I also do a pre-show mixtape beforehand that's always themed to the movie. We do themed giveaways. And I do... what I like to call cover art cards, which are little trading cards. I make one for every event that we do every month, and it features like the cover art, the VHS cover art of the movie we're showing, and a little bit of information about the director and creators. And that's always free. I hang those out as you're coming into the events. And I also do a swap and shop before and after the movie, where I bring all kinds of analog media, laser discs, VHS, Betamax, cassettes, comics, and I encourage you guys to bring out anything you want to trade or sell as well. There's always a lot of heckling at these movies because it makes the makes the event a lot more fun.
Yeah,
and better the more you drink or smoke. And then Rewind itself provides, just in the way that it's built, a very like basement, a 90s basement hangout, like you're hanging out at your friend's parents' basement or something.
Yeah.
So it's very conducive to something like Analog Sunday. But yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. You're burying the lead. Like, the best time that you can have, I think. If you like the Puppet Master type of film, getting together, having a drink or two with your friends, and talking shit on watching a movie that you probably caught on, you know, Up All Night or something.
Or may have never seen.
You have probably never seen.
Yeah. Like,
strive for the weird underground, a lot of shot on video stuff, but also like mid 2000s stuff that was straight to video that just no one paid attention to.
Yeah.
So
I love it. Very good. Next slide. So, as our special guest, Eli, start us out. What is getting you excited this month? What have you seen or read or watched?
Sure. So, I got something newer, like, in contrast to what we just saw, but it has a lot of relevance to what we just saw. So, if anybody caught it in, like, the week that it was out in theaters, 2024's Stop Motion.
Yes.
God damn, what a fucking awesome movie, man.
So good.
Yes,
so yeah, it's a very thematic pick, especially for this event. Basically, the movie is about a stop-motion animator navigating the complicated struggle of actively losing her overbearing mother to a stroke and living in her shadow because her mother is also a very famous stop-motion animator, and it doesn't go very well. It's directed and written by Robert Morgan, who also does the stop motion in the movie. And if you know Robert Morgan, you might know him most famously from the short The Cat with Hands, which was circulating on YouTube a long time ago. But it has awesome, very grotesque stop motion scenes in it. And where a lot of movies with a stop motion focus could go, they could feature that a little bit and then go corny for the rest of the movie, like very mainstream horror. This one goes really vicious and biting, so it's fucking great. So great. I think it's on VOD now, so I would absolutely recommend checking that out.
Yeah, it's dynamite. It's really good.
Yeah. I think it's something ridiculous, like 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. Like everyone that's seen it in
fantastic.
Our circle has like, gotta go see it.
Especially if you liked this movie. It's awesome.
No, it's good.
Very good. All right, Oren, what are you up to?
So I am picking not as recent a thing. I learned about the existence of a hour-long, made-for-TV Japanese adaptation of The Shadow Over Innsmouth from 1992.
Sure.
Which is on YouTube. It's the only place you can watch it, as far as I know. And we can put a link in the show notes when the
Absolutely.
Show goes live. But it's great. Like, it's very weird and very Japanese and very from 1992, but it's fantastic. It's a really good adaptation, actually.
Yeah, and I love it when we can give free stuff, you know, like free content out to check out. Very good.
Yeah, it's got crazy practical effects
and
stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. I like it. So my thing I want to talk about today was The Black Guy Dies First by Robin Armin's Coleman. It is essentially a really great partner to horror noir, which came out a few years ago, essentially just discussing the history of black representation in horror all the way from, like, you know, the beginning, White Zombie, to they talk in very, very big detail about the newest Candyman and Jordan Peele. But it was fascinating looking at all of the different archetypes and how they've grown throughout the ages. So if you like reading about movies, if you like reading about culture, man, it's your thing. So you should totally check it out. And we'll put a link in the show notes that everybody can check out to that book as well.
Yeah,
so.
Sounds good.
All right.
All right. First giveaway time.
Yeah,
all right, all
right, all right.
All right, so get your little tickets out. So we've got some weird shit.
That's thematic. Thematic shit.
Yeah. So
vaguely.
The first giveaway, we got a pile. Look at this. Everybody contributed to this. We got some DVDs, including some of those, like, dozen Puppet Master movies we were talking about. We've got a spooky book about dolls. We've got a spooky book about... a spooky, like, comic book about, like, toys coming to life. And then we've got the biography of Charles Band.
Oh, so, cool.
Who made, sort of made Puppet Master. And so, who is going to get that? Last three numbers are 098. All right.
Yay! Picked a good night to come and a good prize pack. Yeah. Amazing.
Mysteries. This hotel seems to have quite a history, Mr. Gallagher.
Who are you people?
A research team with special powers.
My God.
She's experiencing the past.
Because we are all joined by our thoughts.
Has uncovered an ancient secret.
I have something I want to show you.
Metaphysically speaking, I killed myself.
But they are playing with an evil force.
What would you do with the power?
You can't save her, Alex.
They have given life to a deadly power.
We're all in danger.
And now a box of little toys.
I think someone's in the room, Frank.
Has become a gang of little terrors. Pinhead. Blade. Ms. Leech. Jester. And Tunneler. Irene Miracle, Paul LaMatte, Barbara Crampton, and William Hickey as the Puppet Master.
Okay, so this is where we usually try to frame the discussion, right? Like, we try to give ourselves some really loose guidelines. We typically, I typically start and ask, like, why did you pick this movie, Oren, you know?
Yeah.
But I think it is important to ask Eli a couple of questions. Number one, why VHS? And two, why Puppet Master?
Oh, man. That's two very wide open questions.
Good luck. We're going to go to the bathroom and leave you here. So.
Yeah, so, I mean, much like everyone else I know that's very into this niche culture of VHS collecting, it started back from when I was a kid renting stuff from Hastings and Blockbuster in the day, and, you know, walking into the stores and committing all the covers of the VHS tapes to memory and just browsing through all the fucking batshit insane covers that we saw that could never live up to what was on the tape.
Never.
Yeah, as DVD came into to light and Blu-ray through the years, VHS died out a little bit, but we were always kind of like a more poor family, so we held on to VHS a lot longer than most people probably did. And I still have some tapes from my original childhood. I think Hellraiser 3 and Pumpkinhead 2, which explains a lot about me. I just kind of never gave up on VHS. We went through DVDs and Blu-ray and stuff, but then about 11 years ago, I went to a thrift store when I got to Kansas City and found a copy of, funny enough, Castle Freak on VHS.
Nice.
And I was like, oh man, I kind of, you know, no one talks about VHS anymore. I should, you know, start collecting these again because I'm a horror nerd and a collector. Why not get into VHS? And then it just kind of took off from there, forming Magnetic and starting Analog Sunday. But yeah, the marriage of horror and VHS is one of the strongest bonds, I think, for anybody that's into it. Like, VHS, watching things in through a grainy screen with tracking and stuff on is very conducive to horror as a genre, I think.
Yeah.
Presents it very well. Puppet Master, I can't explain. No. I have been in love with Puppet Master since I was a kid. I was raised on horror, like started out with watching The X-Files from my mom getting me into it, and very fast from there delved into like you know, the classics like Friday the 13th and Scream, and she would show me like Vincent Price movies. And I, from going to my trips to Hastings at Blockbuster, found Puppet Master, and I already, like, as a kid, was very into like action figures and stuff and horror action figures. And so when I was told that there was, or saw that there was a movie about these things coming to life and killing people, I was like, oh, sign me the fuck up, I'm in. And yeah, from there, quickly delved into finding the rest of the Full Moon catalog and just being so attracted to these movies that had like some very, very much like heart behind the forming of them, but were still like really weird and silly.
Yeah.
And just not anything like I'd really seen before when you butted up against like Scream or Friday the 13th. They have such a charm to them.
Yeah.
I
think that charm, next slide, Andrew. I think that charm is part of the reason why all three of us, like when we were talking about an episode to do, I think this was probably the first time all three of us were on board, like, oh yeah, we got to do that thing, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I don't know, me and Puppet Master go back to my cool aunt who would like let me sleep over, and she would take me to Video Gallery, I think is where I would go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
they had like all nine of them, right? And I remember every time I'd go, we would rent one of those Puppet Master movies, and it
nice.
Just became Popcorn and Aunt Sue's mm-hmm. and Puppet Master, man. And like all three of those things still fill me with glee, you know? So,
and all the Full Moon movies, like, so, you know, like everybody else, I grew up going to the video store, and mine was not an actual video store. It was like a corner of the grocery store.
Yeah.
But like, you know, they had these Full Moon movies, and Full Moon was this direct-to-video brand that Charles Band put together after Empire Pictures, which made like Reanimator and From Beyond and stuff. When after it went bankrupt, he brought out Full Moon, and Full Moon was similar types of movies but direct to video instead of theatrical features. And for me, one of the things that really like attracted me to them was that they were one of the only places at that time, and but this is, you know, late 80s, early 90s, that was doing stop motion and like stop motion animation in their movies regularly. And almost every Full Moon movie has, from that era, has stop motion. Mm-hmm. Almost all of it by David Allen, who did stop motion for this. And like, even as a kid, like one of my first memories of like really loving a movie as a kid was Clash of the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
And so like anything with stop motion, I was just immediately into as a kid. Like it was like, it felt like magic. You know, it felt like, yeah, they always talk about movie magic, and like stop motion felt like magic. It felt like watching a toy come to life for real.
Yeah.
And it was just such an amazing experience for me, and nobody was doing that in the 90s except Full Moon. And so I like rented like every Full Moon movie that the tiny little corner of the grocery store had.
Yeah. Well, I think both of you guys have kind of hit on different parts of that question that are unique, but unique to each other, right? Like VHS mm-hmm. feels very corporeal. Like it is... like, it is a cassette I can carry in my hand. It is,
right.
You know, large and physical, and those puppets in stop motion feel the same way. They are both extensions of this very real thing
yeah.
that feels super ethereal now, you know, when everything is in the cloud somewhere or
right.
whatever, right? I can barely hold the things that I love. So.
Yeah, and I remember I was younger. I'm younger than both of you guys, so I had to, like...
Thanks for mentioning that, Eli. I appreciate that.
Had well,
to
everyone
get,
always
had to
that
get
up.
That one in, didn't you? All right.
Everyone always brings that up when I say collect VHS, and they're like, weren't you not born when VHS? I'm like, no, I very much was, and we were poor, so thank you. I had to coax my mom into letting me rent Puppetmaster 1 and 2. I remember those are the ones that Blockbuster had, and when I found Hastings, if you guys remember Hastings,
oh,
yeah.
They
oh,
always
yeah.
had... like the fucking weirder movies, so they had the
yeah.
rest of them. And side note, when I discovered Sci-Fi Channel when I was younger, they always showed a lot of the Puppet Master movies, whether it was in like a Halloween marathon or just randomly throughout the day when they used to show a lot more horror. And so when I found that out, I was like ecstatic. And that was finding those on TV, since I couldn't rent them as much as I wanted, that was what taught me to record stuff off TV.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
how I learned was to record those Puppet Master movies. But then in Blockbuster, since I was still a lot younger, around the same time as I was finding Puppet Master and much weirder horror stuff, I would still rent like kids movies on occasion because my mom would never object to that. So unknowingly, in the realm of Full Moon and Puppet Master, I gravitated towards a series and then two other movies, which were Josh Kirby Time Warrior then the movies Frankenstein Reborn and Werewolf Reborn, which were, if you don't know, Moonbeam, a subsidiary of Full Moon, produced movies like Charles Band's Movies for Kids. And unknowingly,
of course,
it was like all Full Moon was just encompassing my life. So.
I mean, if Charles Band could make money off something, he would produce any damn movie. They had like a softcore arm as well, and anything that he thought would make a dime.
Yeah, it was all, he had his prints all over my life. Yeah. So, yeah.
Good. All right, next slide, Andrew. This is on you, Warren. Talk to us about this.
I figured we should mention this. So, like, before the movie, you all saw the bit where it's like, stay tuned afterward for the behind-the-scenes thing. And that was the thing that was another thing that was unique about Full Moon movies, is every one of them on the tape, there was a video zone afterward that would show a little bit about how the movie was made. It was essentially like a DVD featurette, except back then we didn't have DVDs, we didn't have featurettes yet. And so it was my, at least, first experience of seeing how movies got made, like actually seeing a behind-the-scenes feature of any kind, were these video zones. And so I would watch them every time I got a Full Moon movie, and it was sort of my bargain basement, you know, beginning of a film school.
I like that.
Every time I rented that, I would stay past the credits because it was exciting. I didn't know. I think that was also my first introduction to anybody putting extra features on a tape, aside from like previews. Mm-hmm. I was like, there's more after the credits?
Yeah. It's pretty cool. All right. Next slide. So I think when we were putting together our ideas, the one idea that I wanted to talk about was the concept that, like, all three of us love silly things like this movie, right? And they give us a sense of nostalgia, and we could probably talk way too much about our introductory experiences. But that idea of nostalgia, I think, can sometimes be not great if we take it to its political extreme, or I think what we are seeing now with the idea that we're going to just drop a bunch of music into a, you know, a Stranger Things episode or whatever. I'm a Stranger Things fan, right? Don't get me wrong. But, like, feels a little, you know, like they're playing my heartstrings purposefully.
Yeah.
And I think that is problematic, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that anybody who has listened to very many episodes knows that I am not a fan of what I dubbed here manufactured nostalgia, which is essentially...
Yeah.
Anybody trying to sell me something I already bought 20 years ago, like the number of things that are in theaters right now, that are in TV right now, wherever they are, that are IP holders rehashing that IP, intellectual property, in case, you know, but, it's cynical, essentially, right? Like it's just corporations, Disney, 90% of the time, just trying to resell things they already own. And I'm not a big fan of it, and I think that it preys on genuine nostalgia, right? Like,
sure.
We all have nostalgia. Nostalgia is something we all feel, but what we're really feeling when we feel nostalgia is that impacted us at a time when it was formative for us, right? Like, it was not... It's not the thing that is actually the source of the nostalgia, right? It's not that, you know, Ghostbusters or Indiana Jones or whatever.
whatever movie's coming out next month. Yeah,
it's not that it is, in fact, the best movie or the most important movie. I mean, they're great, but that's not why we feel the nostalgia. We feel the nostalgia because when they happened to us. They happened to us when we were still forming, and so they left a mark.
Yeah.
And corporations prey on that to sell us product, essentially. But those two things aren't the same. You know, like, And I think separating that's important.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think corporations, politicians, you know, like, are tapping into this very rich vein of, like, things were better back then, you know? And I think history tells us things rarely were better back then, right? Yeah. In the big example that that kind of came to me like a bolt of lightning, right? There is this kind of played for laughs, funny scene where we get the idea our dead bad guy is really bad because we get this rape scene in the elevator, right?
Right.
And she is describing the scene that she's seeing, and she's like, she's having sex with him, but she doesn't want to, or whatever. Like, that's just rape, right? Like, it is the 80s way, right, of getting around the subject without saying the word or describing it in that way. And it reminded me, Bell Hooks has a really great essay about, like, how media sometimes sanitizes those things or plays them for jokes or whatever. And, like, shit wasn't great back then, you know? Yeah. Like, not that it's better now, but hopefully maybe a little.
I mean, we hope. We all hope that it's better.
Right. We hope we're taking baby steps.
Each subsequent
time. It just
time.
Wasn't as brought to light back then.
Right. I
yeah.
Mean, and we talked about things differently and everything, but yeah, I mean, you know, it's...
complex.
It sure is.
Yeah, next slide. And I think this is more about nostalgia, and I think we're running a little bit long, so we'll... move to the next slide, Andrew. Yeah, so, you know, to kind of give voice to the actual, like, Make America Great Again presumes that America was great at some point in time in the relatively near past, right? And I don't know.
And that it stopped being, which is, like, you know, yeah, these are both key, like, oh, yeah, remember back when X thing was different, which is almost always worse.
Yeah.
It was better then, right? Like, no, it usually wasn't. But, like, you know, you can't go back to any time in the even pretty close past and get a time when, say, you know, women didn't have fewer rights, or people of color didn't have fewer rights, or workers didn't have fewer rights. I mean, you can take any group and say, you know, like, go back 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, and those people will have fewer rights. And so anytime you politicize nostalgia and look back on the past with these rosy-colored glasses, you basically run the risk of losing a lot of, you know, progress people have made and as far as, like, what rights they have available to them.
Yeah, like, arguably things were better 20, 30, 40 years ago for a very small subset of people, you know, and I think we all know who those people are.
Right.
I think the reality of the situation is we're all better off
right.
when we can take marginal baby steps together, right? And sacrifice a little bit of that. So that's how we're going to lead to Puppet Master 13, The Rise of Baggett. No. Andrew.
I genuinely don't actually know what number we're on Puppet Master at this point.
Five,
is it?
I think.
No, I felt 13 was a safe.
It's legit. It is legit at least like 13.
Axis was 10, yeah.
Yeah, it is at least like 12 or 13. It's wild.
Okay, so I can tell you, I've seen probably the first three or four. I do not have nearly the history and lineage. So would one of you care to talk about the master of puppets as, you know, this very important horror franchise?
Very important.
I don't know.
So I mostly honestly wanted to include this slide just so I could include this amazing picture I found of Mount Rushmore as puppets. Because
that's Mount Rushmore.
That's right? It's delightful. But I did find while I was doing a little research for this that the, like, Charles Band's website proclaims this the most successful
film series
of all time. which is...
Also, the Horror Podcast is the most successful horror podcast of all time. We're going to put it and say it right now.
You know, and it is probably debatably, right? Like, I mean, it's very successful. It has, besides the dozen or so sequels of varying quality, it's got, you know, like, there's a video game. There's several toy lines, as you can see if you're here in the audience. We have several of the toys. There's comic books, you know, just all sorts of weird, like, merchandising tie-ins to this, you know, what other movies that never had a theatrical release can boast that much shit. Like,
yeah,
yeah, that's true. Know.
I think it's definitely got to be Full Moon's most successful franchise.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. 100%. Yeah. It's definitely, like, it's what they're most synonymous with.
Perfect. All right, so next slide. Sexy ESP. All right.
I mean, can
you read my mind, Warren?
I'm just saying, don't. Like, this is definitely, like, the ESP in this movie was definitely all sexy ESP, yeah. Anyway.
Clark Gale and Carol Lombard had sex on this table.
Yeah. Ooh, all right.
So, yeah, like, the weirdest thing about Puppet Master, especially if you've seen a whole bunch of the others and then go back and see the first one, is the weird psychic shit in the first one, right? Because that's not in any of the others. And the psychic plot of this one has nothing to do with puppets, either. Like,
yeah.
The two plots could have been two completely separate movies. And so the psychic shit always strikes me as really interesting about this because it's so random. But also, like, all the people are supposed to be psychics. You really only get the one dude seeing the future in his dream and the one woman having always sexy psychometry shit where she knows who had sex every place she goes.
Except for the opening scene where he's like, oh, yeah, I'm totally getting that shit. And she's like, I'm not getting nothing,
yeah,
man.
Which
was
very random also. Yeah. But those two were something else.
Yeah, they were very Full Moon, I would say. That's
true. That they were.
They are reoccurring characters in many, many, many of those films. Yeah, I think there is no Chekhov's mind reading in this. Like, there's no dream sequence where he gets the solution. Like, literally, if we're being fair, none of the characters really do anything to help themselves.
I mean,
it's always
none of
the puppets.
None really do anything, yeah. Like, Alex is a complete failure as a protagonist in every respect.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a good little COVID mullet going on, though, you know? Like, it's flowing right behind the ears.
He's skeptical of everything.
Yeah, he's got the same look through 90% of the film. Yeah, I like it. I like it. So, there are only two things that are flexed in this movie. The idea that we can see into the future, and then, vaguely the idea that, you know, psychic projections exist in real objects. So.
Yeah, and those are definitely both, like, things that people who believe in ESP believe in. Again, why she can only do sex stuff, I don't know. But whatever, you know, it's her thing. I'm not psychic, so better than I can do.
All right, Andrew, to my favorite slide, please.
The most important slide. The slide we've been building through this whole
time. That's
right,
that's right. I freely admit, I watched this movie when I was an adolescent. I was titillated by the leech woman. As I have grown, I still remain. She is my favorite puppet. I am a little disappointed that we are not representing her here. But I like, I jokingly put on your Facebook, I do think she is my favorite character for a couple of legitimate reasons. Number one.
She responds some kinks for you.
Yeah. right. Yes. I think there is probably, to an adolescent, there's something to be said for.
I mean, there is definitely something weirdly psychosexual about making the only female puppet disgorge leeches from her mouth. I don't know what the fuck is going on there,
oh,
but there's definitely something,
right?
Right, like, yeah.
And the fact that you find out later on that
it's
actually Andre Toulon's wife that he puts
as the
leech
woman.
Woman.
Yeah. Which is... So there's that connection. Also, like, she delivers the coup de grace most of the time. So I think overall, I'm going to say I love the leech woman because she's a bad bitch and she finishes stuff that everybody else lays out. And I appreciate a strong and confident woman that can spit out leeches.
Giant leeches from her mouth.
Yeah,
I
right.
Mean, who doesn't?
Yeah.
Ultimately.
So,
everyone but you.
Yeah. Next slide. At the end of the day, though, she's just hot. She's smoking hot, man.
Is this from the video game?
Sure. I don't know.
I feel like it has to be.
I think, yeah. Did I do that?
I believe you did, yes.
All right. I think I just typed in hot leech woman from Puppet Master, and that's one of the images
that
came up.
It's good that you put from Puppet Master, because God knows what you'd get if you didn't put that
I'm
on
I'm pretty
there.
Sure it was a school computer, too. So. All
right. You're fired. That's
I love my job. I love my job. I've only got 9 years left. Come on. I can make it. All right. All right. So we've reached the most important time of the evening. Let's give away some more stuff.
So yeah, before I draw, so
give
you
away
get
a bucket of leeches.
I did not bring any leeches. You'll get another Puppet Master DVD, another book about spooky dolls. You will get an actual puppet. You will get Blade, tiny Blade. And you will get a Time Life Mysteries of the Unknown book about psychics, so you can explore your own sexy psychic powers.
Zalex and
yeah.
All right, last three numbers are 093.
093. All right, yay! All right. Okay. All right, so we are now racing towards the third act, where Orin and I usually call this four corners. We're going to call it six corners today, where we give you some recommendations. Maybe before we do there, was Puppet Master the first watch for anybody that's still out here?
First time.
Amazing.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's amazing. Oh, wow. Yes. Awesome. Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah. Question mark. Please don't. Hate us? So, Eli, start us out.
So in general, I could recommend killer doll movies all day long. That's my sweet spot. And Oren will direct you towards one of my other diehard favorites behind Puppet Master. But definitely, I'll say watch Puppet Master 2 through 7, or Retro. They're of varying quality, but they're pretty fucking awesome, I think. They get a little bit worse as they go on. Beyond Retro is at your own discretion. So I would narrow it down to these two. We start off with Demonic Toys from 1992. This is, I guess I'd say, the other killer doll mainstay of Full Moon. Yeah? Like, pretty known behind Puppet Master, you think?
I think so, yeah.
So basically, a police sting operation at an old toy factory goes wrong and inadvertently awakens a demon buried beneath the factory that takes the form of a young boy. The rest of the movie is an officer, her perp, and a few other characters fighting through the factory against the demon and his little army of possessed toys, namely Baby Oopsie Daisy, Jack Attack, Grizzly Teddy, and Mr. Static.
I'm not actually sure I knew the robot had a name. Holy shit.
I didn't know that either. So like Puppet Master, this has, like the first Puppet Master, has a little bit more of a serious tone, especially the other than killer doll movies that Full Moon will go on to do. But the storyline and the vibe is way weirder than Puppet Master.
Way weirder.
At least a little bit, I think. Puppet Master's kind of weird. But unlike Puppet Master, Demonic Toys uses puppetry more for the dolls more often than stop motion. But what little stop motion there is in there, it's also done by David Allen, who does the Puppet Master stop motion.
Also, random weird note, Demonic Toys was written by David Goyer, who went on to write like the Christopher Nolan Batman movies and shit. So
super weird.
Yeah.
So
really
you
good.
Too can get your start here and then win some Academy Awards. I love it.
But it's awesome. So if you liked Puppet Master, I'd say go watch the other ones and watch Demonic Toys. But don't watch Demonic Toys 2 and whatever else comes after. It's fucking horrible. All right, so continuing on with that, the next one is Tales from the Hood.
That's a great VHS case.
From 1995.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's shiny.
Yeah.
So, if you don't know, this is a classic B-grade horror anthology, perfect for the VHS format. And we're going to focus specifically on the third segment, which I learned is called KKK Comeuppance.
Love it.
So, a racist Southern senator, a previous member of the KKK who is running for governor, sets up his office at an old slave plantation despite protests from the community. He is warned that the plantation is haunted by little dolls that are possessed by the souls of past slaves, but he continues on with the setup. The dolls begin to manifest and eventually is taken down by a little army of them. This movie straddles the line of like dark comedy and more serious, especially the segments. But the segment fucking rules, and the stop motion in it stands up to That's great. Puppet Master and others, yeah. I'd say. It's
a delight.
It's very fluid, yeah. Much more than Puppet Master is, honestly. But, yeah, I'd say this is a pretty more well-known anthology, but that segment especially fucking rules.
Yeah.
So, Tales from the Hood.
Yeah, black written, black creatives, yep. Involved, like, really, really fantastic thing.
Very, very good.
Yeah. All right.
So, before I get into mine, I want to say that all of us having these VHS tapes to hold up is because of Eli. These are all from his collection.
He's got...
my living room is literally a Blockbuster.
Yeah, like, it's wild in there. So yeah, I picked, before anybody else could get to it, I picked Dolls, which was an Empire Pictures Before Full Moon existed, directed by Stuart Gordon, and it's probably my favorite, like, killer doll puppet type movie. It's this amazing, weird, like, fairy tale of a movie that is about killer dolls.
I think it might be the first episode that we did together.
It might have been.
Yeah.
I definitely was one of the first ones I picked because I fucking love this movie. So good. And then my other one is a movie called Witch Trap, which is, yeah, a bit less well known, but also involves like psychics and some like ESP and paranormal shit as they like investigate a haunted house. And it's got a very like direct-to-video Full Moon vibe going on, even though it's not a Full Moon movie. So.
Yeah, very good. Speaking of Full Moon vibes, I picked Wishmaster, mostly because they, use a ton of, mostly because they use a lot of stop motion, in the first couple, and they have the same kind of silly vibe,
it's great. The whole series is awesome.
Yeah. They're an absolute ton of fun. They basically, every movie is essentially like a monkey's paw. You know, like, careful of the wishes that you make. They are an absolute blast. But if you were looking to get into another franchise that's got a ton of movies that are also kind of fun and have the same kind of silly fun vibe, Wishmaster is your thing. Yeah. And then, probably a really great, the third part of your film and then Trilogy of Terror would be just fantastic bedfellows. Maybe a little bit problematic as we look back on it, but oh my god, it is a ton of fun. You got some killer dolls, some killer puppets.
Karen Black.
Yeah.
And Trilogy of Terror is great because it's one of those movies where, like, it's clearly a trilogy, right? It's got right in the name. No one remembers anything about it except that one segment.
Yeah, right.
The Killer Zuni Fetish Doll segment is the only part anyone remembers ever.
Even on the second movie, the cover is the Zuni Warrior Doll.
Yeah. Okay. Next slide. All right.
I said to include this because I had an opportunity to include a quote from Vanity Fair in a slideshow about Puppet Master.
We're the only ones doing it, folks.
And I actually only know this quote because it was used in a William Castle movie. So, you know, whole thing to unpack there. But this is also an illustration from Vanity Fair, which is pretty great, frankly.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, very good. Before we announce what we're doing next month... Eli, talk to us about what you have coming up. Give us all your social media so we know where to follow you. All of the great things
Tell them what's happening on Sunday.
Yeah. All right. So, as I said, the next Analog Sunday, if you guys want to come out, is this Sunday, which, yes, is Easter Sunday. If you're not going to be with your family and worshiping Jesus, if you don't want to do that, come on out.
You can do both.
Not where we're going. We are bringing back the return of our annual Evil Analog Easter. This month or this year, we are showing Hellinger, which, if you don't know, is a complete ripoff of Hellraiser from Brain Damage Films that includes a demonic priest, and I have a priest costume on order for it. I will be handing out communion wafers. And yeah, you guys bring tapes to trade if you want to come out. Movie starts at 7. If you want to get there at like 6:30 or so to trade and look at tapes and hang out and talk, and we do lots of giveaways and... It'll be a blasphemous good time. Come on out to that.
It always is.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Come on out to that. I have some of my past releases set up outside if you guys want to check them out, and I got flyers and stickers and stuff. Or you can follow me on Instagram at Magnetic Magic Rentals, and that's where all new events and announcements and releases are handled through. So yeah.
Perfect. Where can they find more of your stuff, Oren?
I am on all the stupid social medias as Oren Gray. If you look for Oren Gray.
Are you still on Twitter?
I think technically. I mean, you know, it's holding the place there anyway.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, I seem to be getting the most traction on Blue Sky right now, but I'm on every fucking thing.
Nice. All right, very good. Well, you can find me on Blue Sky and all those things. I'm never on Twitter, but I think my handle still is at Ty Unsel. Otherwise, I think probably the most wholesome place to interact with us would be Letterboxd, which they are not a sponsor, but we absolutely adore what they do, which is mostly stay the heck out of our way and let us talk about silly movies that we love so much. Yeah. So, next slide. All right.
So next month we'll be showing something very different from Puppet Master. As is usually the case here at the Horror Podcast, I pick movies from all over the goddamn place. And in this case, I picked the Bob Hope version of The Cat and the Canary from 1939. Regular listeners will remember us mentioning The Cat and the Canary many times, and that Tyler doesn't know what the fuck I'm talking about every time I bring it up, so we're finally going to make him watch it.
Yeah, it'll be great. We're doing it mostly in prep, because Signal Horizon Entertainment, the kind of group that allows us to do this, is putting on a big detective Scooby-Doo pop-up experience at the Big Rip in May. So if you always wanted to be a member of the mystery gang, you're going to get your opportunity to dress up as your favorite Scooby-Doo character, solve some mysteries, drink some drinks, have an adult mystery time.
Yeah.
So. This is going to be great. If anybody caught Drinkaway Camp last time, it was a fucking blast, and it was set up beautifully. So,
Yeah, The Cat the Canary, we're going to talk a little bit about like its connection to Scooby-Doo and how it sort of prefigures that. And then in May, we'll have something even more thematic, but that's a secret for now.
Yeah. Big secret, but big exciting things to come. So, well, very good. I think that will do it. So, class dismissed. Thanks so much for coming, everybody.
Why are we clapping? We're
Thanks again for coming. Hope you had a fun time. Hope we see you next month to talk about Cat and the Canary.